Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. My, do we have a lot of college football things to talk about, some of which are actually college football, which is why I think we're going to get myself and my two co-hosts directly on reader questions, because we got a lot of good ones this week. So we'll just address the week that was and that will be through reader questions. And if we have any time left afterwards, maybe we'll look at a couple of games, including Florida and Missouri, which we're pretty sure Florida's going to lose. Because we have to answer this first question, which has to do with Florida winning, which is a rare question. It has been a rare question for, like, I don't know, 3 years at this point. Ryan Nanny joining us from Brooklyn. What is that question and who is it from?
That question comes from Richard Johnson at RAGJUF on Twitter. His question, when is the last time you were as shocked watching a Florida game as you were Saturday night? So I guess we can start by talking about the level of shock that occurred on Saturday first, because my initial reaction was to rationalize and to sort of say, like, look, they led by 25 points at halftime. All it took was, you know, if Ole Miss gets a quick touchdown drive to start the second half and Will Grier throws a bad pick six right after that, Games right back in hand. So I was pretty much from the word go talking myself out of it. And I think that was just to rationalize the reality that I was not prepared for.
Yeah, it was very difficult because Florida actually won in manners that I haven't seen them win in a while. One, they were the better team. I don't know right. How that happened.
Right, and they chose to demonstrate that, because there were times when Will Muschamp had the better team against, you know, decent opponents when he was at Florida. But the choice there was always this, like, lethargic form of judo where they would just let you fall onto a sharp object first.
Right. And that was the goal. If you had gotten, like, 10 people to say, Florida beats Ole Miss, what's the score? They go, like, ugh. Yeah. Like 15-14 or something like that. So it wasn't just the win. It was like the complete dominance and you know, Will Grier just doing pretty much whatever he wanted on offense against that defense.
I mean, like there are a number of really improbable things for anyone who's watched this team post 2010, really. And that goes even for 2012 when Florida won double-digit games, because if you watched any of those games, it's one of the most deceptive double-digit win seasons ever.
We were very unhappy that season.
Even watching it, came within a blocked kick of losing to the University of Louisiana Lafayette. Like, this was, Will Muschamp was the idiot at the casino who showed up, asked the dealer what to do, and just won like 8 hands in a row. That was it, or, you know, 10 hands. But this was not that. This was decisive. This was a competent football team. Will Grier went 24 for 29. And even, that's like actual quarterbacking.
And even the five, like, most of them were they were incompletions that you were like, oh, the receiver didn't make the catch there, or maybe you called, like, they were all good incompletions. It was very strange.
I think he made like 3 bad plays. Like, he lost a fumble, and there were 2 like near picks that probably should have been picked off. But even then, both of them had been intercepted, he had 4 TDs. We haven't had 4 passing touchdowns in a year.
Yeah. It was – I still don't know what to make of it. And I hate that. I would really love to walk away from this game and just say, oh, Florida is on the way back. They have got it fixed. Am I an asshole because a big part of me thinks, oh, this is the best this team is ever going to play this season, and to hope for that again is foolish and stupid?
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, I'm an asshole for other reasons, but.
Now, if you're talking about, like, the most shocking since whatever game, I think that the mind immediately goes to Georgia last year, when the Gators just ran wild on Georgia after having nothing to offer against Missouri. But that sort of has like the, yeah, well, it's Jacksonville factor to it. Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, you know, things happen in Jacksonville. And then, like, you go back before that and you'd say, oh, they lost to Georgia Southern. And it's, well, sure, lots of people lose to Georgia Southern. That's not it either.
No, I have an answer that I can propose, and I'm digging a little bit for this one.
For me, it's all the way back to the 06 title game when everyone assumed Ohio State was a better team and Florida just blew their doors off. Like, it's not quite that level, but there's nothing really since then that I would say better or worse is more surprising than this one.
I haven't been this surprised by the result of a Florida game since, I think, the Mississippi State game we lost at home.
Mm, that was in 2001?
No. I'm talking about the 2010 season.
Oh.
When I'll remind you, Georgia still didn't beat us. That would be, I think, the 10-7 game.
Yeah.
When we're at home and Mississippi State runs the same play like 30 times. I think they ran a counter play like 30 times that game with Chris Rolf, right? They just kept running Chris Rolf over and over again. And I remember looking at that and seeing 10-7 and thinking, when did double digits become an impossibility? And that mindset, like, that sat in for like 4 or 5 years. That was when my brain fell into the, oh, we're terrible now.
Yeah, I'm going to give you one from the first year of the Ron Zook era.
LSU?
No, it's the game right before LSU, and that's the Ole Miss loss on the road. The LSU one's a good candidate, too, because the Ole Miss road loss at least fell within the comfortable Spurrier territory of drop a SEC West game on the road for no goddamn reason. So maybe it is the LSU game, because you expected that they would bounce back from that, and they just got destroyed at home.
Yep,
in a way that they had gotten destroyed at home earlier, but it was by Miami, and when Miami was good.
No, there are moments you know when your team has completely lost the plot and has become a disorganized group of people no longer attempting the same endeavor all at once, but right? That happens.
Yeah.
And that game has a moment. It's when LSU calls a fake field goal and the holder, I think, walks untouched into the end zone from like 30 yards out. And at that point, I was like, oh, our head coach is a former special teams guy. We're never going to be good again.
Yeah, because what was really shitty about the 0-2 Mississippi loss was that Eli Manning did not play well in that game. It was a decided victory for the Florida defense in that game. Held Ole Miss below 200 yards, I think. But, like, Rex Grossman played like a total asshole. Just a total asshole. The winning score for Ole Miss ended up being a pick six. And the only other scores they had in that game were a safety and a rushing touchdown. It was just so goddamn weird.
Yeah, there's always this moment where you realize, okay, this team has changed fundamentally.
Yeah.
And that's usually the moment. In that LSU loss, that's when I thought, like, oh, cool, my youth is dead. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
But I was young at the time. You don't understand.
Oh, it must have been so much worse for you.
I was a fucking sophomore in college.
Yeah, no, I could just move on to like the bitter cold of... I could inhale it deep in my lungs, the bitter cold of adulthood. You still had to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seen some shit.
Yeah, so that's the last time I was probably this surprised. In the positive sense, it'd be the 2006 game when we just put it on Ohio State. That was a delight. I'd like to watch that again sometime. That'd be great.
I have a good friend who, from law school, who is an Ohio State fan, and he, before that game, out of nowhere, just came up to me. He was like a super nice guy, not competitive, not an asshole, and even he came up to me and was like, "So do you think Ohio State's going to win by 3 touchdowns or 4 touchdowns?" And I didn't say anything until the next day, and until every day after that I saw him. Sorry,
and to this day.
Sorry, Marco.
Mm.
3 touchdowns, oh. My ass.
Yeah, that was good. I got to watch a man who had Ohio State dolls. He was one of these bizarre, like, you know, Buckeye State fascists who collect Ohio State things. And, yeah, I mean, they usually weigh somewhere between 250 and 320,
mm-hmm.
somewhere in there, occupying a seat by himself at the Taco Mac in Decatur, Georgia. Where I watched this, he put two of these weird little dolls up on the table. ordered like 23 beers and ordered like 500 wings. And he left at halftime and took his dolls with him. And watching him exit with his buffalo wing stained hands, clutching the two dolls and walking out was still one of the most magnificent things I have ever seen. And one of my worst moments as a human, because I was like, I feel nothing but complete joy in this moment of your total pain. And I experienced no regret. Even in the memory of it, I'm like, yeah, what a horrible thing to think about somebody. God, that feels great. It's just delicious.
It's why it is, if we're being honest, it is why Ohio State fans just relished everything that happened last year.
Absolutely.
Because they had been basted and marinated in suffering and shame and pain for so long. Like, this meat is so juicy and tender, the shit that Ohio State fans have been through.
Well, let's not give them that much credit. I mean, come on.
No, I you say that?
I mean, they lost a few BCS bowls.
Yeah, I lost a few BCS. Come on. They were more in the school drama. They were more the ambitious and insecure and gifted kid who still finished second to the effortless genius year after year after year, right?
But they were still better than Michigan for most.
Yeah, I mean, they're not Wazoo fans.
Oh, I understand.
You want suffering.
I understand what you're saying, but
they deserve nothing, Ryan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Deserve got nothing to do with it.
I'm just saying, in a 7 year span, they lost in bowl games to Florida twice, to Clemson, to Texas, and Louisiana State.
They
beat Arkansas, and it didn't count.
They were Chick Hicks from Cars, the Michael Keaton character. Mm-hmm. We won finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I always finish second to the king. That's who they were.
It's also important to remember that this is a school that lost to South Carolina in consecutive Outbacks Bowl.
Including the former, I believe that was Ryan Brewer, former like Mr. Football for South Carolina. A former football for Ohio playing for South Carolina.
I'm checking here.
Yeah.
No, these were the Phil Petty years.
The Phil Petty years?
Oh, no, yeah. These were the Ryan Brewer years. You're right, you're right.
Yeah. Ryan Brewer, Mr. God. Football, Ohio.
Lost to Lou Holtz twice. Old ass Lou Holtz.
Yeah, like that isn't even prime Holtz, man. No. That's like, yeah, that's like old, busted, like Ted Danson on, Becker. No.
You're thinking of Becker.
I'm thinking of Ted Danson on Becker.
You're thinking of Becker.
Yeah.
Does Brutus the Buckeye ever, do you ever worry that he's in blackface?
Never thought of that.
Just next time you see him, just think about that.
You hear the glass clinking in the background. Yeah, I think Brutus Buckeye's podcast is already off to a great start.
I'm giving ambiance.
So I think we agree that this is, we were both absolutely shocked, both still trying to figure out whether Florida's actually good, and that they'll probably lose to Mizzou this week, right? Like that's the natural, like Ole Miss beat Alabama and they lost to Florida. Florida beat Ole Miss and now we're going to lose to Mizzou.
Ole Miss fans for their part are fully in panic mode. They're like, I think we'll win 7 games.
I feel like this roller coaster has at least another bump on it because Florida at LSU, that's now a night game. So now LSU fans are extremely fired up about it. Ooh. And they have this little thing against South Carolina, which sure, that'll be like 19-18 or whatever, but they'll get out of that fine. So like, I don't know who gets the bigger like crazy letdown here, Florida or LSU in that game next week. Because this could really go either way. And whoever it is, it's sort of just kicking the can down the road, obviously, because, you know, the big horror week is coming. But somebody's catching it next week.
Yeah. I think everyone catches it every week. Yay.
Yeah. It's fun.
That's 2015. Everybody hurts.
Speaking of, man, like, I feel so bad. Doug was so optimistic last week.
Oh, we had Bulldog. We had noted Bulldog fan Doug Gillette on here, and he was very optimistic. And I will take.
Was he?
Yes, he felt so positive.
I mean, it sounded like relatively Georgia positive.
No, yeah, but for Doug, that was glowingly positive.
Yeah, for Doug, yeah.
Doug is.
It was. He used to do manic Doug, depressive Doug.
Yeah.
So that was like relative. That was like a 6 on the manic scale, I'd say.
Yeah. Doug is the surgeon who's like, hey, there's like a 38% chance you survive this. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. And this. Who said all along?
Oh, don't do this.
I'm going to do it.
Don't do this.
I don't get to do this very often.
All right.
I'll state that. Disclaimer.
Mama told you.
I am wrong so rarely. I mean often.
You were wrong about how often you're wrong. God damn.
Can't even get my wrongness right. I said Alabama would drop a train.
Yeah.
On Georgia. Because they were going to try to be dumb and try to fight a brick with a brick. And nobody brings bricks like Nick Saban. Nobody. It's just big dumb. It's just they playing this big dumb pro style offense. Brian Schottenheimer has absolutely no creativity, which everyone had said. And they couldn't even block them. They couldn't get the ball downfield. They played the dumbest possible game plan. Like Mike Bobo running the no huddle would have been way better against this. Way better.
I told you this already, but I'll share it with Jason now. Jason, how many times do you think Georgia went 3 and out in this game?
Oh, I wasn't paying attention, but let's go. Let's put it at 9.
The answer is 10. The answer is 10 times they ran 3 plays and punted.
My guess was 8. So it exceeded even my worst expectations.
And we're both pretty attuned to the Georgianess. But
on another drive, they threw a pick 6 before they could get to play 2. So
we'll count that.
Yeah, that's a punt. That's a punt. That's a punt with bonus.
that gets you the ball back, doesn't it?
That's the multi-ball punt.
Multi-ball.
Right after that, they got 3 more offensive snaps. That's efficient.
Uh-huh.
I really can't overstate, like, how... I mean, this is one of those things where, like, you don't have that clear, like, vision often of how things are going to go. But, like, it wasn't... LOL Georgia. It wasn't, oh, this team folds every time they have big expectations, which they do. But it was more a matter of like modus operandi for both teams totally not matching up, right? Like Ole Miss is designed to beat Bama. Like that's sure. That is. Spread them out, throw it up, got a bunch of fast wide receivers, got a quarterback who's going to take some chances. You get a couple of turnovers. Hell, you get like one lucky tip.
And Jesus likes you. You're tithed up. You're prayed up.
You are so blessed.
Obviously, we see Georgia has some things to confess. First of all, and then after that, yeah, they're kind of designed to lose to Alabama.
Yeah, they're designed to lose to Alabama. Georgia's designed to beat other teams. This is just not one of them.
Georgia's designed to like sort of get past everybody. Like it's not designed to beat better Georgia.
Question though. Georgia is going to, because, again, all things Georgia fit within a very rigorous narrative. Georgia is going to take this loss out later in the season on another team in such a way that causes at least some people to say, well, maybe Georgia got a fix. Maybe Georgia's something to be reckoned with. Who is that team?
Tennessee.
Yeah. Tennessee's a good answer, but I'll throw one more at you, and that would be Auburn.
Oh.
Georgia might save it for Auburn because Tennessee is like scrappy.
Tennessee, man, that's like
dead.
Tennessee's. Yeah, they're going down to 4 straight losses. I don't think anybody's buying Georgia too much. Then again, if you beat Tennessee by more than a score, I don't think anybody's done that. So maybe that's impressive.
I think that would be kind of impressive. The other thing that would be kind of impressive. This is a like the Tennessee Georgia series. As of late, it's had some extremely bitter moments.
Yes.
Like very nasty, bitter, a lot of recrimination, a lot of retaliation from year to year in terms of how this game goes.
I think Tennessee at this point would take just a vicious ass beating. Like, I think they almost crave that because the cruelty.
Oh, my.
The cruelty of. Almost,
don't spank me, Georgia.
Almost beating Oklahoma, almost beating Florida.
Oh, Reverend.
Having Arkansas on the ropes and losing all, like, wouldn't you just rather get beat by 30? Isn't that easier to process?
It does sound relaxing for Tennessee, for everyone involved, to just take that L.
Like down by 30 in the first quarter, like Texas against TCU, just lay back and say, all right, ah, that's done.
Let's get them next week.
All these other games, they've been hooked up to that machine from the Princess Bride, and they've just been having the life sucked out of them. But this time, just, you know, get a sword stuck right through your neck. It's quick. The sword's name is Nick Chubb.
Yeah, and that's one thing that, like, Georgia fans can feel pretty good about. Not everybody's going to have the, like, giant concrete, you know, stanchions of Alabama's defensive line. They're just not.
I mean,
things get easier.
They do.
Once you're done playing Alabama.
They do, and then you have to play Missouri and Florida, who kind of do have pretty good defensive lines.
Yeah, who are basically the same. Basically have similar defenses. Yeah. Then you have to chase around, three straight option run teams to close the season.
That would get three straight teams with running quarterbacks. Like, by the time they get to Georgia Tech, as bad as Tech has been, they're going to be either so sick of that shit that they beat Georgia Tech by 40. Just stay still. Just stop it.
You're a quarterback, goddammit.
Act like
backwards.
One.
If I see you ball fake in one more direction, they're going to be so sick that they either like beat them by 40 or they lose by 10. Like, there's no middle ground there.
You know what Paul Johnson's going for, though? He's going for that slow, that drawn-out loss. You just lost by 5. Sorry.
too bad you lost by a weird score. You lost by a number that doesn't even make mathematical sense.
You lost by an imaginary number.
That'll look good on a commemorative rivalry t-shirt.
Well, we beat you by the square root of -3.
Let's take another reader question. Ryan, you gave one. I'm gonna offer one now, which is from Prada James, at Prada James on Twitter. It's a question about Florida. Because we did ask about Florida. Do your towels ever fully dry after a shower, or do they just stay damp all the time? Woo! Let me introduce you to a couple things about living in Florida. One, your house is just going to grow mold on the outside for no reason. If you have stucco, it's going to turn green. Your towels, they're never going to be completely dry. Ever. You can get them warm and wet, or you can get them cold and wet. Those are the two states of towels. In the state of Florida.
Cold and wet's pretty good.
Cold and wet, yeah, because it's 85 degrees outside.
Right.
Minimum. If you live further south, it's 90 plus.
I think a really good, I think we could make a really good documentary about, just set up a camera outside any major airport in Florida. You go Orlando, Tampa, Miami, really doesn't matter. And just put the camera right outside the automatic sliding doors where people go to wait for, you know, a car to pick them up or to hail a taxi or some shit like that, or to go walk and get their rental car. Because the moment when you leave, you've been on a plane, a pressurized climate controlled environment, you've entered an airport, one of the most climate controlled buildings in the state, and you've exited and had a hot, sticky blanket of atmosphere thrown on you, and that moment is horrifying. And I think just watching that for an hour would be like the most beautiful nature documentary we can make about Florida.
It's a lot like that. Like, to go to one of our go-to references, it's a lot like the moment in King of the Hill when they go to Phoenix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they go to Phoenix, they like Bobby Hill stands out and goes, "Oh my God, it's like standing in the sun." And Peggy Hill says, "This city should not exist. It's a monument to man's arrogance." That's what people think when they exit the airport in Florida.
It's why we keep looking for Atlantis, because we're like, well, we can live in this. So probably it would have worked under the sea as well.
Yeah. And the other thing you should know about Florida, by the way, is that you'll never, ever be comfortable. You just won't. Nowhere is comfortable. There's not a comfortable spot in the entire state. You will never not sweat, and you will never enter a car without performing the Valsalva maneuver before you get into it.
Here's the thing, that you know where you will be pretty comfortable? Inside a Sam's Club.
It's true. It's true. You want to know why? You want to know why people are fat in hot places? All hanging out at the Sam's Club.
Getting them free samples.
Getting them free samples all day long.
Sam's Club has everything you need to survive in Florida. Like chain restaurant food that you can make at home, cargo shorts, DVDs from 8 years ago, and mobility scooters.
Like, yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, to other people, I think Sam's Club is a place where you acquire supplies for your home. To Florida, they are sort of our zombie emergency relocation centers. Just go to the Sam's Club and live off 99-cent pizza for the rest of your life. It's not that different from your regular life, really.
Your cart, sir. Why, thank you.
Why, thank you. Wally.
Yeah.
Wally.
Wally's basically about the state of Florida.
Hey.
Oh, hey, Jason. Did you drop out there for a second?
Jason was gone for about 5 minutes, but we just kept going.
Yeah. Luckily, the topic was Florida towels, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, cool.
We've moved on to, I don't even know what we're talking about now, actually.
I was about to ask Jason if he had a reader question he would like answered.
Oh, to be quite honest, y'all have any more?
We have so many before we discuss the upcoming week. For instance, I have yet another one, which is, again, about the state of Florida.
Can we have Jason answer this one first? Because I think he is equipped to answer it.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
This is from Patrick Fox, which is at @Pat_Fox424. And by the way, I broke a policy. I normally don't answer questions from guys who have their girl in their Abbey because I just think it's weird. Like, are you afraid someone's going to steal you on the internet? It's like we're having a conversation, but your girl's watching us. Right? Like, oh, talking to someone on the internet. It's not
The name is Pat?
No, it's Patrick Fox.
Oh, Patrick. Okay. Because I was going to say maybe it's Patricia.
No. In his picture, though. There's both of them.
It's so a nice picture of them, to be fair. Great,
they're nice looking people.
Maybe it's Patricia and Richard and they Rickard.
I mean, he is from Louisiana, so Rickard is a possibility. That's his
Rickard
name.
Rickard Bro with an X.
Rickard Bro the Eighth.
Rickard Bro the Eighth. We call him Skunk.
I call him Rick Bro.
Yeah. But it's either that or he wants to demonstrate that he's landed a woman, which is weird that you'd want to show the internet that you're a registered sex haver. Whatever.
Anyone?
Yeah. Oh, look. I'm mateable. It happened. We put on formal wear and everything. Okay, I've made enough fun of your picture, dude. Patrick Fox asks a great question. What's the most Florida thing each of you have ever done?
Ooh.
And I mean, Ryan has a good one, I'm trying to narrow mine down. I've got two or three on deck, so
let's let Jason take it away.
Okay. Have I told you about the moped?
No.
You told me about the moped.
I'm already excited about this.
It's okay, good.
So I haven't broke it down on air though.
Not that I recall.
Okay. Well, whatever. It's not like anybody listens to this. So one of my my rich friend. He was the one who always had all the stuff, like had all the video games, always had, you know, just all, more toys than all the rest of us who were from not exactly poor, but from not quite the same side of the tracks. He had in his basement, there, in addition to like a boat, cars and all kinds of stuff, there was this moped that we were all always dying to try out, but he would never let us. It was kind of no, it wouldn't be safe, but we sort of always assumed this. He's like lording it over us that he's got a moped. This is in high school, by the way. This wasn't yesterday.
Yeah, I was like, hey, this was 3 weeks ago.
This was after church.
So me and my wife were so one night we decided, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to wait until this dude goes to sleep. Then we're going to take the keys. We're going to take out the moped. I don't care if it's 6 a.m. We're staying up and we're doing it. And he knows this is happening, so he's forcing himself to stay awake too. Eventually, around like 5 or 6, he finally goes down. He's also the biggest one of us, so now he's got the key in his pocket. So we have to take the key out of his pocket, in which that results in, you know, he starts throwing hands. There's some wrestling. Somebody gets in a headlock, whatever. Eventually, we get the keys out. And he decides, you know, fuck it, whatever, I'm going to sleep. So We take out the moped. By this point, it's about 6 a.m. The sun is already coming up, and it's time to start riding on the machinery around the neighborhood near a golf course where, you know, cops actually show up and stuff. And I think I got on it like 4th or 5th, so like 7 a.m. I haven't slept in 24 hours. I was coming around a curve. Here comes a Ford Mustang. This is late 90s, so every car is a Ford Mustang. And went flying off it, shattered my right forearm in like four places. My arm looked like a, what's it? They're not a parentheses. It's not a bracket. What are those?
Oh, like the curly parentheses.
Yeah, a little parentheses.
Yeah, right.
That was my arm. Like it was to the point where I'm trying to like bend it back into shape.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I was in so much shock where it didn't hurt. I was like, you know, trying to like crunch my arm back into something straight, but I still had to drive the moped back, and it's like, which that involves like twisting the handle, and I'm like, wow, this is uncomfortable, you know, like my arm not connected and having to be used, and I'm bleeding from like my knees, my ankles, my head. I wasn't wearing shoes or a helmet or a shirt. Finally got back, and our here's a good detail: our youth pastor was among us. He looked at my arm and said, "Dude, that's pretty messed up," referring to my arm, which is in like a lightning bolt shape. And then he's like, "You want me to run you to the hospital?" And I was like, "Nah, I gotta take a nap. I'm just gonna call my dad as soon as I wake up." He's like, "All right, dude," and he goes to sleep immediately. Like what fucking morons? Like I'm bleeding from like my entire body is an open wound, and my arm is about to fall off, and we all just decide let's take a nap. And then like 10 a.m. everyone wakes up and like, yeah, that's still pretty messed up. So altogether, that's about as Florida as it gets, as far as I know.
Damn, that's Florida. I mean, I was gonna ask in the middle of the story, the first thing I thought of was, did you go to the hospital? And I assumed that you did. And that was going to dock you Florida points.
About a solid 10 hours later, went to the urgent care.
Yeah, that's
and then after my parents finally found out about all this.
Wow.
I had to have surgery, and I had to have a big ass external metal thing in my arm, like bending it back into shape over the course of a month. When like I still have scars, and I had screws in it for like a year, all from riding a fucking moped. But like, it wasn't just riding it; it was like not telling any actual authorities outside of like a maybe stoned youth pastor for almost an entire day.
That's
fucking morons.
That's really good. I'm not going to lie. That might be better than the Florida story I was going to tell.
No, yours is pretty good.
Okay.
There's
plenty of Florida within all of us.
That's true. I think I've already told my most Florida story on this podcast, which basically involves driving to a sinkhole in the middle of Alachua County, jumping like an unregistered, in no way regulated sinkhole, jumping off of a high dive the wrong way and landing straight on my face from about 20 feet. But the second story that I will tell, because it's new, involves in high school, I was on the tennis team because I'm very athletic. And tennis team was basically just an excuse to leave school early and go eat something terrible for lunch before you went and lost a tennis match, because our tennis coach in true Florida fashion was the strength and conditioning coach for the high school football team. I don't think I ever saw the man lift a racket in 3 years, but he did teach us how to do push-ups on command. So we left school one day to go to a tennis match, and we went to Checkers, and we were
that's how you didn't have to say I was in high school. You could have said I thought Checkers was food, so we ate it.
I mean,
we put Checkers into our faces.
I mean,
therefore, you know how old we were.
I can't think of a worse thing to eat before exerting yourself athletically than Checkers. But we did. So we go to Checkers. We go through the drive-through. We pull into the small parking lot in front of every Checkers, where we are eating our meals like animals in the car. Being that this is the early 2000s, it would have been the late 90s. We decide to start cranking the rap music. I am nearly positive we were listening to the Method Man Red Man album. We open up the sliding door of the car that I was driving, a Toyota Previa, a minivan that looks like an egg. We all start bouncing up and down in the car so hard happens for so long that the shocks fall out of the van. And I have to call my dad, be like, hey, we got a problem here. This car is inoperable due to meth and red.
I feel like that's part of one of their videos. Like, everyone's bouncing back and forth in a car so hard that something bad happens. If that's not, you might need to sue.
You think so?
I think they stole that from you.
Oh, I thought you meant I needed to sue Toyota because I could have said, hey, based on this video, this was safe and
yeah, y'all should have known. I was thinking like red and meth stole that from you, but yeah, Toyota should have known that was a known issue.
I just demonstrated
in a safety video by red and meth.
I just hate that you like messed up a Previa because you can turbocharge that thing up to like 300 horsepower.
Here's the thing. That Previa is by the time I went to college, we had given it away to some charity because we had run the thing into the ground, and we still saw it in Gainesville being used. It was a fucking tank of a car.
They're unkillable.
There's probably somebody getting a bad hand job in that Previa right now.
I would only hope so. Okay, here's my story. I had to choose between a couple of them, but this will center around living in Gainesville, which I think is a really good slice of Florida because it's slightly rural, but also filled with idiots who don't know how to live from all over the state. So it's kind of a United Nations of Floridiana. There was a place called the Crack Shack, and it was a house that a friend of mine, who's now a quasi-respectable person, lived in. And he lived there with a guy who had a girlfriend who was a diabetic who also decided to drink heavily. I don't know if you know what happens when diabetics drink heavily. It ain't good. But she bawled right through it because she was a soldier. And we went there, and the neighbors in this place, there were two houses, two. Both of them, these like horrible X-Files crime scene concrete bunker style houses in the middle of the woods, but just off 13th Street in Gainesville and next to the Haverty's. The Haverty's is an important detail.
Now we're cooking.
Yeah, quite literally, because we were cooking on a shopping cart mm-hmm. that had been laid over a fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready? That had been started with wood that was taken from broken down furniture that we took out of the back of the Haverty's for firewood.
That's good chemicals.
Yeah, that's the good stuff. They're like, you want a hamburger off this? And you're like, no, I'm not going to eat that. And then an hour and a half later, after you've consumed 400 beers, you're like, oh, I'll take that.
It's the wood glue that makes it tasty.
So we're talking about actual like cookout grilling.
On the shopping cart. You've never seen the redneck shop, you know, where you have the shopping cart that still says cash and carry on it, and you lay it over
with
the fire?
Yeah.
And yeah. You do it as a joke, but then somebody puts the hamburger on it, you're like,
you're pot committed at that point.
Right. So the neighbors came over. The neighbors worked at a nearby bar. I don't want to name it. It's called Munnigan's. And Munnigan's basically stayed open and is probably still open because they sell Coke. That's how this place stayed open for years. I'm sure they're clean now and nothing's changed. But the neighbors came over and the neighbors used to do this. They used to like hit deer, right? They would see deer and accelerate. They would accelerate and hit it and go, oh, it's a roadkill. I guess we could take it. And they would bring it home and bury it in their backyard. Yeah, and then start the fire over it, put it in the ground, cook it that way, and then bring it up. And they would eat it with pocket knives. I'm making none of this up. They were really cool people. One of them, who had been in jail frequently, wrote poetry that he never wrote down. He just liked to sort of, you know, speak on things with a pocket knife full of venison in one hand and usually a Bud Ice in the other. So we're having this night, and for some reason, Trivial Pursuit comes out. As does some, like, there's drugs. There's a lot of things going on here. And it's hot and there's really no air conditioning. And I think we just watched a fight where somebody had gotten to like a seriously racist fight. Cause I don't know, if you put on boxing and the two people are of a different race, inevitably these like wasteoid friends of friends show up and they start, you know, basically being completely racist out in the open.
Yeah, that's okay in boxing.
It's okay. I didn't know that. This is when I learned that was that night. So anyway, afterwards, to soothe everyone's nerves, we played Trivial Pursuit. Now the diabetic girlfriend, who's also an alcoholic, is laying on the couch, and she is completely passed out. Like, I think she's dead. Like, put a mirror under her nose every now and then. Maybe she's dead. Did I mention she was like a local TV news anchor? There was that too. So you'd see her like on the news the next day, like, "Hi everybody, I'm named here and welcome to channel whatever," which was really fun because the night before you saw her completely passed out. And anyway, this is the actual crux of the story and the point that I'm getting to. We were playing and everyone's giving the wrong answers because everyone's very drunk, right? Like, okay, you know, who was the president assassinated in, you know, 1901, you know, ceding the presidency to Teddy Roosevelt, you know, and somebody's like, Bob Barker, you know, yes, that's right, take a wedge. And at this point, I answer a question, and I think I answered it close to correctly, and out of a dead coma, this woman just bolts up and goes, "You all think I'm fucking stupid. Well, I'm not, and I'm going to show you." And she bolts out of the door, like from a dead sleep, like bolts out, grabs someone's keys, gets in a car, and piles into two trees before zipping out onto 13th Street and to God knows where. You guys think I'm stupid. It's 2 a.m. And she just guns it and bolts out, swerving down the street. Like, it reminded me of Brad Wesley in Roadhouse, right? You know, like that kind of swerving, like all over the road. Just doing that down 13th Street.
I own this town.
So if I could give you the ultimate Florida experience, it's being sweaty, probably incapacitated by several different kinds of narcotics and alcohols, and seeing somebody endangering other people's lives without being able to do a damn thing about it.
And just the incredible rallying in the face of adversity.
Sure.
Just, you know, life finds a way, man.
That's the thing. This is the common thread between Spencer's story and Jason's story. Florida is not sleeping when you should and sleeping when you shouldn't.
That's part of it, yeah. And then in the teen romance stuff, the vampires, when they stay up all night, they get real smart and magical. For humans, especially those with a little bit of Florida in them, the opposite is true. The opposite is the case.
The most Florida story is one that neither of us can ever have. None of us can have this story, and it's because it's one of the founders of Hooters, who died when he was on a cigarette boat going like 70 miles an hour on the water, hit a rogue wave, and they never found his body.
Found him. That's true. Can I give you a Mudigan's update before we go on?
Oh, sure.
Because I spent some time. I found the Yelp page for Mudigan's. 3.5 stars. Mm? I'm going to read a portion of my favorite review on the page. This is a gentleman named Adam who's saying that despite the reputation and the scuzzy SOBs that are always there, I've had no problems, even though he feels like he sticks out. But he says, quote, "Not as much as one poor soul I recently saw there. Guy in his 30s drinking all by his lonesome. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I like to get out of the house and enjoy some me time with a few beers and relax, enjoying the peace and quiet. What makes this sad is that it was June, and this man was dressed like Captain Kirk."
Yep.
Yep. So
that's it.
It's Mudigan's.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was like a sweat wicking spacesuit.
Probably. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure it was Under Armour.
Yeah. That's just Florida. Florida is where you go when everything else in your life has gone wrong and you don't want to pay taxes.
That's true.
Florida. Let's move on from our extremely rich conversation of most Florida moments and go towards actually looking at this week, because there are a few interesting things. One, SMU at Houston on Thursday. I just want to like give everybody a heads up. You might think about watching Washington at USC. Don't do that. At 8 p.m. on ESPN2, watch SMU and Houston because they're both really fun. That's it. That's my preview for anything that isn't on Saturday.
Counterpoint? I agree with you. Watch SMU at Houston. But keep an eye on what's going on at Washington USC because let's get real crazy and say Washington is leading that game in the third quarter. You might want to watch at that point. You might want to watch USC fans realize that they're the ones stuck with Sarkisian now.
And also because if nothing crazy happens, Houston will be running away from SMU.
Also that.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen in the third quarter. But yeah, there's going to be two solid quarters of intriguing football with two coaches who will probably in 2 to 3 years be coaching somewhere else for more money with slightly more talented players.
One will be at Texas.
One will probably be at Texas. But this is the point in USC season. They're 3-1. They had that nice bounce back win from Stanford. Optimism is at is extremely cheap for USC fans right now. And a Thursday game on the road is definitely, or a Thursday game at home, that's definitely where you want to spike it.
If it's at home, I mean, Sark's near all his favorite hangouts. That could be just as deadly.
Allegedly.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you didn't say that. Also, by the way, on Friday,
What are you gonna say?
It's North Carolina State, Virginia Tech. Don't watch it. Okay, so bringing us to Saturday, what sticks out on Saturday for you, Jason?
Let's see. We'll start in the noon slot. the eye turns to Oklahoma, Texas, but don't watch that shit. I mean, we know exactly how this game goes. Oklahoma's way better than Texas, and it does not matter.
Texas is going to win by like 17.
The final score will be within two. I don't know what it'll be, but throw the records out the window, all that. Yeah. It doesn't matter that Oklahoma is way, way better than Texas.
I think if they make them get up so early, the results just get lopsided and unpredictable, right? Like, college students aren't awake at 11 a.m.
I think whenever you're in proximity of, like, fried Oreos, you can only play so well. Like, when you know, like, the fried Twinkies, I mean, that is not prime athletic condition. I mean, I think, like, LSU could handle it, but
just the air makes your body.
Texas, you ain't built for this, Texas.
Just the air is so fatty that it makes your body sort of tired and sleepy.
They fry the football, which,
like, ugh, I've been breathing cheesecake for the last hour. You got to be kidding me.
If LSU played this game, they'd be undefeated.
This is why Big Tex set himself on fire. He couldn't take it anymore.
I could never eat it, and yet I smell it.
That's got to be, yeah. Oh, man. When Texas gets down by like 37, that's good. Big Tex didn't die for this.
I still sing that to myself, by the way, at least once a week.
Yeah, Big Texas on fire. Yeah.
The other games of note on this day, we have Georgia at Tennessee, which we've already said. Yeah, Georgia's gonna just manhandle them if the script goes the way we think it should. Go ahead, put your money on Tennessee. Then further down the road, we have Wisconsin at Nebraska, which is at 3:30. But you know, Mike Riley might show up at like 3:45.
Hey guys, what?
I think it's more that he's got to leave at about 5:10.
5:10.
Because all three of their losses this year have come down to basically the last play or so.
Yeah. So don't watch.
Yeah.
So just set an alert. Get a friend to nudge you when that game enters the fourth quarter plus 14 minutes. And you'll see the important part. Arkansas at Alabama. I think this has noble effort written all over it for Arkansas again, right?
I think Arkansas can start to rebuild its credibility. Basically, you know, start to work its way toward back exactly what it was last year, where it was like, by the end of the year, this is one of the best teams in the country. That starts Saturday when they lose by 5, something like that.
Even 12 is probably fine.
So that'd still be better than losing to Toledo, yes.
Yeah.
You know what it's going to be. Getting the ball back, 8 minutes left, 8 or 9 minutes left, down by like a number that doesn't allow a field goal, right?
17. Like,
4. Down by 4.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Ugh. And then 8 to 9 minutes left, and Arkansas will attempt to matriculate the ball down the field, and it'll just be excruciating. And everyone at the end will say, well, they almost beat Bama.
They were right in it, man. They were right in it.
Florida at Missouri, the sure loss for Florida now that we've had a good game.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
An interesting game that I don't think a lot of people are necessarily looking at yet, because we're not all into the Big 12 just yet. But Oklahoma State, that is undefeated Oklahoma State, at West Virginia, coming off of a 44-22 loss.
I'll take the ears. I don't know what the spread is, but I'll take the ears and the points.
Damn! A good defense that did not look good. Their offense did put them in some bad situations.
I don't think that game was quite as big as it looked, the Oklahoma game. And also Oklahoma State is unbeaten because of two straight a T-Boone. I'm making money signs and making it rain hands gestures over here. Two straight weird Big 12 refs things in Oklahoma State's favor that ended up contributing to the victories.
Hey, listen.
We can say that now because one of them wasn't Texas, so we can bemoan Kansas State's plight. Poor Kansas State. Bad for Kansas State.
If you get 8 breakfast sandwiches at the QT, you get a free first down.
and that's why Randy Edsall has never had a first down.
Yeah, but in the quietly undefeated teams, Oklahoma State lurking there, and nobody really sort of paying attention to them.
I think there's quietly undefeated, and then there's like,
oh yeah, undefeated.
Can we see some ID?
Yeah. This is an ID check game.
Oklahoma State
did a business.
They did. Look at them. They turned in a project on time. I think they're a little better than that, but yeah, I would go ahead and take West Virginia in this game. A game that I think has the promise for the highest comedy for the uninvested viewer, that would be Miami at Florida State, aka talented people playing untalented football.
Al Golden's the last one stand. Game
Miami gets up for all year. Not after it.
Man, it's nice that Miami started the collapse ahead of the Florida State game this year, so nobody can accuse them of losing the Florida State game and then quitting. So that's a plus.
maybe they figured, like, maximum effort until the end of the FSU game, that's not enough. We need to go ahead and save some from before and combine that into the FSU effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I think this at best is Miami grabbing the foot of Florida State so that they both get sucked into the wreck of the ship as it sinks. Like, that would be the best hope for Miami, is to not necessarily win this game, but to ruin their seasons together.
No one will have anything.
I mean, looking at this game, like, you can say, like, ah, sure, Miami will play hard and all that, but I kind of think FSU is being underrated at this point. I mean, I think they're 8, 9, 10 at the polls, which is mostly just because that's where they started and they haven't moved. But, like, when you look at the actual numbers, to me, they look a lot better than I think what a lot of people are assuming. A lot of people are hearing Everett Golson's trash and whatever. No, he's fine. And, like, the offense is – looked up something the other day. It's like it's 25th in yards per play, which isn't terrible, but I think it's a lot better than the narrative, so to speak. Especially considering you had a game in there against Boston College, and that'll wreck your numbers every time.
Wake Forest.
you stepped in the Wake Forest vortex. Yeah. Sure, this all sounds bad after they just beat Wake Forest by a touchdown.
I was going to say 24-16 over Wake Forest, unconquered.
I mean, I think we can look at FSU as being, sure, they're not 2013 FSU, but I don't know. I feel like they're a little bit better than they're getting credit
for. If Oklahoma State is the let me see some ID undefeated team, Florida State is the let me see some ID, oh, you just slipped me $50. Okay, you're cool.
You're cool. Come on in.
Yeah.
$50 is a bit much for a Florida State person. I'm thinking they'd start with a 10, let's be real honest.
This is a half-filled sub-club card.
If we're talking comedy games, I think I can one-up you there in that same time slot. Michigan State at Rutgers.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
No. Hear him out.
Rutgers is bad, but that hasn't stopped Michigan State so far. And also, it's at Rutgers. So it's basically last week's game when they tried really hard to let Purdue win, and now it's a road game.
This is a good week for both Michigan State and Ohio State to exercise the demons of why do you keep looking not very good against bad teams, because they get to play the two arguably most disorganized and shambolic teams in the Big Ten, Michigan State playing Rutgers and Ohio State playing Maryland.
Let me give you that 10 o'clock heater though. Okay. 10 o'clock Eastern.
All right.
You know where I'm going.
All right.
Jason's least favorite team in college football.
that's no longer true.
Versus his most favorite team.
Versus his most favorite.
I'm being slandered both directions.
Yes. I'm going to type it on a note send it to you so you can sue me for libel too. Let's get them both in.
But then it's copywritten too. So
yeah. So I mean, I got all three. Cal at Utah. Yes. So
now,
so
I like Cal just fine this year. The issue, it's not any sort of an ideological disdain for Cal, and it's nothing against the university or his fans or anything like that. What I don't like is when bad teams throw the ball 80 times because it makes the game last 5 hours until 3 a.m., and I'm the one who has to stay awake till all this bullshit ends.
This is what's known as Felder's complaint.
Basically, yeah. I mean, if you work in this sport, it's sort of you just want things to finish. And when a team is doing this for no good reason, just so it can limp along to 3-9, then sure, you develop an animosity for that team. But when it actually works, that's fine. Now we're talking about woohoo, fine. You know, throwing the ball around, putting up yards and stuff, that's fun. Sure, great. So yeah, I have no problem with Cal this year.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're no Utah.
Even when they're playing your beloved Utah, who,
sure, I prefer the Utes and all, but still, no. If Cal wins, that's fine.
Yeah, this is again the rule of Pac-12 round robin pain that Utah has paid it to Oregon and will now have to receive it at the hands of the unexpectedly good Cal Bears. Just why I'm taking Cal. Also, the better quarterbacks on Cal.
And then Cal later in the year will lose to Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Propelling Northwestern into the playoff picture.
Correct. That's what the Pac-12 is there.
This is science.
Pac-12 is just there to screw up as many people's seasons as possible, including their own members, and propel a rogue team into the final stage of college football.
It's there
football's
to ruin
postseason.
As many things as possible, including the playoff.
It's there.
Including the playoff.
It's there so a one-loss Northwestern team gets in the playoff ahead of a one-loss Notre Dame team.
Jesus.
Whew.
Northwestern goes and plays a 10-4 game in the playoff. Okay, beautiful. We need to shrink this back down to 2.
It's beautiful. Can we make it 3 teams?
Let's do 3
Let's
teams
try 3.
This is how a 2-loss LSU team wins again.
That's already been hypothesized that a 3-loss LSU team will make the playoff, beat 3 undefeated teams or 2 undefeated teams, and win the national title.
Les Miles peeing on your salad bar since 2005.